If they complain, it is of themselves. Their hearts rise not up against the Lord, far less do they open their mouth against the heavens. They justify God and condemn themselves, reverencing His holiness and spotless righteousness in His proceedings against them. 2. They go quietly under it as tolerable. It is good that a man should both hope and quietly wait for the salvation of the Lord. It is good for a man that he bear the yoke in his youth. He sitteth alone and keepeth silence, because he hath borne it upon him. He putteth his mouth in the dust. If so be, there may be hope. Lamentations 3:26-29. While the unsubdued spirit rages under the yoke as a bullock unaccustomed to it, the spirit brought to the lot goes softly under it. They see it is of the Lord's mercies, that it is not worse. They take up the naked cross as God lays it down, without those overweights upon it that turbulent passions add thereunto. And so it becomes really more easy than they thought it could have been, like a burden fitted on the back. 3. They are satisfied in it, as drawing their comfort from another quarter than their outward condition, even as the house stands fast when the prop is taken away that it did not lean upon. Although the fig tree shall not blossom, neither shall fruit be in the vines, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. Habakkuk 3:17-18. Thus did David in the day of his distress. He encouraged himself in the Lord, his God. 1 Samuel 30:6. It is an argument of a spirit not brought down to the lot when men are damped and sunk under the hardships of it, as if their condition in the world were the point whereon their happiness turned. It is want of mortification that makes men's comforts to wax and wane, ebb and flow, according to the various appearances of their lot in the world. 4. They have a complacency in it as that which is fit and good for them. Isaiah 39:8, 2 Corinthians 12:10. Men have a sort of complacency in the working of physic, medicine, though it gripes them sore. They rationally think with themselves that it is good and best for them. So these lowly souls consider their afflicted lot as a spiritual medicine, necessary, fit, and good for them. Yea, best for them for the time, since it is ministered by their heavenly Father. And so they reach a holy complacency in their low, afflicted lot. The lowly spirit extracts this sweet out of the bitterness in his lot, considering how the Lord, by means of that afflicting lot, stops the provision for unruly lusts, that they may be starved, how he cuts off the by-channels, that the whole stream of the soul's love may run towards himself, how he pulls off and holds off the man's burden and clog of earthly comforts, that he may run the more expeditiously in the way to heaven. 5. They rest in it, as what they desire not to come out of, till the God that brought them into it see it meet to bring them out with His good will. Isaiah 28:16. Though an unsubdued spirit's time for deliverance is always ready, a humble soul will be afraid of being taken out of its afflicted lot too soon. It will not be for moving for a change till the heavens moving bring it about. So this hinders not prayer and the use of appointed means with dependence on the Lord, but requires faith, hope, patience, and resignation. 2 Samuel 15:25-26. The proud sinner. We shall consider the generation of the proud getting their will and carrying all to their mind and in their character also are three things. There are crosses in their lot. They also have their trials allotted them by overruling providence, and let them be in what circumstances they will in the world. They cannot miss them altogether. For consider, 1, the confusion and vanity brought into the creation by man's sin have made it impossible to get through the world, but men must meet with what will ruffle them. Ecclesiastes 1:14. Sin has turned the world from a paradise into a thicket. There is no getting through without being scratched. As midges in the summer will fly about those walking abroad in a goodly attire, as well as about those in sordid apparel, so will crosses in the world meet with the high as well as the low. 2. The pride of their heart exposes them particularly to crosses. A proud heart will make a cross to itself, where a lowly soul would find none. Esther 5:13. It will make a real cross 10 times the weight it would be to the humble. The generation of the proud are like nettles and thorn hedges, upon which things flying about do fix, while they pass over low and plain things. So none are more exposed to crosses than they, though none so unfit to bear them. As appears from the reigning pride in their spirit. Their spirits were never subdued by a work of thorough humiliation. They remain at the height in which the corruption of nature placed them. Hence, they can by no means bear the yoke God lays on them. The neck is swollen with the ill humors of pride and passion. Hence, when the yoke once begins to touch it, they cannot have any more ease. We may view the case of the proud generation here in three things. 1. They have an overvalue for themselves, and so will not stoop to the yoke. It is below them. What a swelling vanity is in that! Who is the Lord that I should obey His voice? Exodus 5:2. Hence a work of humiliation is necessary to make one take on the yoke, whether of Christ's precepts or providence. The first error is in the understanding, whence Solomon ordinarily calls a wicked man a fool. Accordingly, the first stroke in conversion is thereto by conviction too humble. Men are bigger in their own conceit than they are indeed. Therefore God, suiting things to what we are really, cannot please us. 2. They have an unmortified self-will arising from that overvalue for themselves, and they will not stoop. Exodus 5:2. The question between heaven and us is whether God's will or our own must prevail. Our will is corrupt. God's will is holy. They cannot agree in one. God says in His providence, our will must yield to His, but that it will not do till the iron sinew in it be broken. Romans 8:7, Isaiah 48:4. 3. They have a crowd of unsubdued passions taking part with self-will, and they say, He shall not stoop. Romans 7:8-9. And so the war begins, and there is a field of battle within and without the man. James 4:1. A holy God crosses the self-will of proud creatures by His providence, overruling and disposing of things contrary to their inclination, sometimes by His own immediate hand, as in the case of Cain, Genesis 4:4-5, sometimes by the hand of men carrying things against their mind, as in the case of Ahab, to whom Naboth refused his vineyard, 1 Kings 21:4. the proud heart and will unable to submit to the cross or to bear to be controlled, rises up against it and fights for the mastery with its whole force of unmortified passions. The design is to remove the cross, even the crook, and bring the thing to their own mind. This is the cause of this unholy war, in which there is one black hand of hellish passions that marches upward and makes an attack on heaven itself, namely discontent, impatience, murmuring, fretting, and the like. The foolishness of man perverteth his way, and his heart fretteth against the Lord. Proverbs 19:3. These fire the breast, fall the countenance. Genesis 4:6. Let off sometimes the volley of indecent and passionate complaints. Jude 16. And sometimes of blasphemies. 2 Kings 6:33. There is another that marches forward and makes an attack on the instrument or instruments of the cross, namely wrath, anger, fury, revenge, bitterness, etc. Proverbs 27:4. These carry the man out of the possession of himself. Luke 21:19. Fill the heart with a boiling heat. Psalm 39:3. The mouth with clamor and evil speaking. Ephesians 4:31. And threatenings are breathed out. Acts 9:1. And sometimes sets the hands on work. A most heavy event, as in the case of Ahab against Naboth. Thus the proud carry on the war, but oftentimes they lose the day, and the cross remains immovable for all they can do. Yea, and sometimes they themselves fall in the quarrel, ending in their ruin. Exodus 15:9-10. But that is not the case in the text. The spiritual consequences of pride. For we are to consider them as getting their will and carrying all to their mind. This speaks, 1, holy providence yielding to the man's unmortified self-will and letting it go according to his mind. Genesis 6:3. God sees it meet to let the struggle with him fall, for it prevails not to his good. Isaiah 1:5. So the reins are laid on the proud man's neck, and he has what he would be at. Ephraim is joined to idols. Let him alone. Hosea 4:17. 2. The lust remaining in its strength and vigor. Psalm 78:30. They were not estranged from their lust. God, in the method of his covenant, sometimes gives his people their will and sets them where they would be. But then, in that case, the lust for the thing is mortified, and they are as weaned children. Psalm 131:2. But here the lust remains rampant. The proud seek meat for it and get it. 3. The cross is removed, the yoke taken off. Psalm 78:29. They could not think of bringing their mind to their lot, but they thwarted with it, wrestled and fought against it, till it is brought up to their mind. So the day is their own. The victory is on their side. 4. The man is pleased in his having carried his point, even as one is when he is dividing the spoil. 1 Kings 21:18-19. Thus the case of the afflicted lowly generation and the proud generation prospering is stated. The fruits of humility. Now I am to confirm the doctrine or the decision of the text that the case of the former is better than that of the latter. It is better to be in a low afflicted condition with the spirit humbled and brought down to the lot than to be of a proud and high spirit, getting the lot brought up to it, and matters go according to one's mind. This will appear from the following considerations. 1. Humility is so far preferable to pride that in no circumstances whatsoever its preferableness can fail. Let all the afflictions in the world attend the humble spirit, and all the prosperity in the world attend pride. Humility will still have the better, as gold in a dunghill is more excellent than so much lead in a cabinet. For humility is a part of the image of God. Pride is the masterpiece of the image of the devil. Let us view him who was the express image of the Father's person, and we shall behold him meek and lowly in heart. Matthew 11:29. None more afflicted, yet his spirit perfectly brought down to his lot. Isaiah 53:7. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. That is a shining part of the divine image. For though God cannot be low in respect of his estate and condition, yet he is of infinite condescension. Isaiah 57:15. None bears as he, Romans 2:4, nor suffers patiently so much contradiction to his will, which is proposed to us for our encouragement in affliction, as it shown in Christ. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds. Hebrews 12:3. Pride, on the other hand, is the very image of the devil. 1 Timothy 3:6. Shall we value ourselves on the height of our spirits? Satan will vie with the highest of us in that point. For though he is the most miserable, yet he is the proudest in the whole creation. There is the greatest distance between his spirit and his lot. The former is as high as the throne of God, the latter as low as hell. And as it is impossible that ever his lot should be brought up to his spirit, so his spirit will never come down to his lot, and therefore he will be eternally in a state of war with his lot. Hence, even at this time, he has no rest but goes about, seeks rest indeed, but finds none. Now, is it not better to be like God than like the devil, like him who is the fountain of all good, than him who is the spring and sink of all evil? Can anything possibly cast the balance here and turn the preference to the other side? Then better it is to be of an humble spirit with the lowly, etc. Humility and lowliness of spirit qualify us for friendly communion and intercourse with God in Christ. Pride makes God our enemy. 1 Peter 5:5. Our happiness here and hereafter depends on our friendly intercourse with heaven. If we have not that, nothing can make up our loss. Psalm 30:5. If we have that, nothing can make us miserable. Romans 8:31. If God be for us, who can be against us? Now, who are they whom God is for but the humble and lowly? They who, being in Christ, are so made like him. He blesses them and declares them the heirs of the crown of glory. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Matthew 5:3. He will look to them, be their condition ever so low, while he overlooks others. Isaiah 66:2. He will have respect to them, however they be despised. Though the Lord be high, yet hath he respect unto the lowly, but the proud he knoweth afar off. Psalm 138:6. He will dwell with them, however poorly they dwell. Isaiah 57:15. He will certainly exalt them in due time, however low they lie now. Isaiah 40:4. Whom is he against? Whom does he resist? The proud. Them he curseth, Jeremiah 17:5, and that curse will dry up their arm at length. The proud man is God's rival. He makes himself his own God and would have those about him make him theirs too. He rages. He blusters. If they will not fall down before him. But God will bring him down. Isaiah 44, Psalm 18, 27. Now, is it not better to be qualified for communion with God than to have him engaged against us at any rate? Humility is a duty pleasing to God, pride a sin pleasing to the devil. Isaiah 57, 15, 1 Timothy 3, 6. God requires us to be humble, especially under affliction, and be clothed with humility. 1 Peter 5, 5 and 6. That is our becoming garment. The humble publican was accepted, the proud Pharisee rejected. We may say of the generation of the proud, as wrath is come upon them to the uttermost. 1 Thessalonians 2, 16. They please neither God nor men, but only themselves and Satan, whom they resemble in it. Now duty is better than sin at any rate. They whose spirits are brought down to their afflicted lot have much quiet and repose of mind, while the proud that must have their lot brought up to their mind have much disquiet, trouble, and vexation. Consider here that, on the one hand, quiet of mind and ease within is a great blessing upon which the comfort of life depends. Nothing without this can make one's life happy, Daniel 5, 6. And where this is maintained, nothing can make it miserable, John 16, 33. This being secured in God, there is a defiance bid to all the troubles of the world. Psalm 46, 2 and 3, like the child sailing in the midst of the rolling waves. The spirit brought down to the lot makes and maintains this inward tranquility. Our whole trouble in our lot in the world rises from the disagreement of our mind therewith. Let the mind be brought to the lot, and the whole tumult is instantly hushed. Let it be kept in that disposition, and the man shall stand at ease in his affliction, like a rock unmoved with waters beating on it. Colossians 3:15. And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to the which also ye are called. On the one hand, consider what disquiet of mind the proud suffer ere they can get their lot brought up to their mind. They have taught their tongue to speak lies and weary themselves to commit iniquity. Jeremiah 9, 5, James 4, 2. Ye lust and have not. Ye kill and desire to have and cannot obtain. Ye fight and war, yet ye have not. What arrows of grief go through their heart? What torture of anxiety, fretting, and vexation must they endure? What contrary passions fight within them? And what sallies, escapades of passion do they make? What uneasiness was Haman in before he could carry the point of revenge against Mordecai, obtaining the king's decree? When the thing has got to their mind, it will not quit the cost. The enjoyment thereof brings not so much satisfaction and pleasure as the want of it gave pain. This was evident in Rachel's case, as to the having of children, and in that case, Psalm 78, 30 and 31. There is a dead fly in the ointment that mars the savor they expected to find in it. Fruit plucked off the tree of providence, ere it is ripe, will readily set the teeth on edge. It proves like the manna kept overnight, Exodus 16, 20. They have but an unsure hold of it. It does not last with them. Either it is taken from them soon, and they are just where they were again. I gave thee a king in mine anger, and took him away in my wrath. Hosea 13:11. Having a root of pride, it quickly withers away, or else they are taken from it, that they have no access to enjoy it. So Haman obtained the decree, but ere the day of the execution came, he was gone. They that get their spirit brought down to their afflicted lot gain a point far more valuable than they who in their pride force up their lot to their mind. He that is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit than he that taketh a city. Proverbs 16:32. This will appear if you consider. The latter makes but a better condition in outward things. The former makes a better man. The life is more than meat. The man himself is more valuable than all external conveniences that attend him. What therefore betters the man is preferable to what betters only his condition. Who doubts but where two are sick, and the one gets himself transported from a coarse bed to a fine one, the sickness still remaining, the other lies still in the coarse bed, but the sickness is removed, that the case of the latter is preferable, so here, etc. The subduing of our own passions is more excellent than to have the whole world subdued to our will, for then we are masters of ourselves, according to that, Luke 21:19. Whereas in the other case, we are still slaves to the worst of masters, Romans 6:16. In the one case, we are safe, blow what storm will. In the other, we lie exposed to thousands of dangers. He that hath no rule over his own spirit is like a city that is broken down and without walls, Proverbs 25:28. When both shall come to be judged, it will appear the one has multiplied the tale of their good works in bringing their spirit to their lot, the others the tale of their ill works in bringing their lot to their spirit. We have to do with an omniscient God, in whose eyes every internal action is a work, good or bad, to be reckoned for. Romans 2:16. An afflicted lot is painful, but where it is well managed, it is very fruitful. It exercises the graces of the Spirit in a Christian, which otherwise would lie dormant. But there is never an act of resignation to the will of God under the cross, nor an act of trusting in Him for His help, but they will be recorded in heaven's register as good works. Malachi 3:16, and these are occasioned by affliction. On the other hand, there is never a rising of the proud heart against the lot, nor a faithful attempt to bring it to our mind, whether it succeed or not, but it passes for an ill work before God. How then will the tale of such be multiplied by the war in which the spoil is divided? Use, application of information. 1. Hence we may learn it is not always best for folks to get their will. Many there are who cannot be pleased with God's will about them, and they get their own will with a vengeance. Psalm 81:11-12. Israel would none of me, so I gave them up unto their own hearts' lust, and they walked in their own counsels. It may be most pleasant and grateful for the time, but it is not the safest. Let not the people pride themselves in their carrying things that way, then by a strong hand. Let them not triumph in such a victory. The after reckoning will open their eyes. 2. The afflicted crossed party, whose lot is kept low, is so far from being a loser that he is a gainer thereby, if his spirit is brought down to it, and if he will see things in the light of God's unerring word, he is in better case than if he had got all carried to his mind. In the one way, the vessels of wrath are fitted for destruction, Psalm 78:29-31. In the other, the vessels of mercy are fitted for glory, and so God disciplines his own, Lamentations 3:27. 3. It is better to yield to providence than to fight it out, though we should win. Yielding to the sovereign disposal is both our becoming duty and our greatest interest. Taking that way, we act most honorably. For what honor can there be in the creature's disputing his ground with his Creator? And we act most wisely. For whatever may be the success of some battles, in that case, we may be sure victory will be on heaven's side in the war. For by strength shall no man prevail. 1 Samuel 2:9. 4. It is of so much greater concern for us to get our spirits brought down than our outward condition raised. But who believes this? All men strive to raise their outward condition. Most men never mind the bringing down of their spirits, and few there are who apply themselves to it. And what is that but to be concerned to minister drink to the thirsty sick, but never to mind to seek a cure for them whereby their thirst may be carried off? Use, application of exhortation. As you meet with crosses in your lot in the world, let your desire be rather to have your spirit humbled and brought down than to get the cross removed. I mean not but that you may use all lawful means for the removal of your cross in dependence on God, but only that you be more concerned to get your spirit to bow and ply than to get the crook in your lot evened. Motive. It is far more needful for us to have our spirits humbled under the cross than to have the cross removed. The removal of the cross is needful only for the ease of the flesh, the humbling for the profit of our souls, to purify them and bring them into a state of health and cure. The humbling of the spirit will have a mighty good effect on a crossed lot, but the removal of the cross will have none on the proud spirit. The humbling will lighten the cross mightily for the time, Matthew 11:30, and in due time carry it cleanly off, 1 Peter 5:6. But the removal of the cross is not a means to humble the proud. Though it may prevent irritation, yet the disease still remains. 3. Think with yourselves how dangerous and hopeless a case it is to have the cross removed before the spirit is humbled. That is, to have the means of cure pulled away and blocked up from us while the power of the disease is yet uncured, to be taken off trials ere we have given any good proof of ourselves, and so to be given over of our physician as hopeless. Isaiah 1:5, Hosea 4:17. Use, application for direction. Believing the gospel, take God for your God in Christ towards your eternal salvation, and then dwell much on the thoughts of God's greatness and holiness and of your own sinfulness. So will you be humbled under the mighty hand of God, and in due time he will lift you up. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. 1 Peter 5:6. In the preceding part of this chapter, the apostle presents the duties of the church officers towards the people, and then the duty of the people, both towards their officers and among themselves, which he winds up in one word, submission. For which cause he recommends humility as the great means to bring all to their respective duties. This is enforced with an argument taken from the different treatment the Lord gives to the proud and the humble. His opposing himself to the one and showing favor to the other. Chapter 4. The Duty of Man in Affliction. Our text is an exhortation drawn from that consideration, and in it we have the duty we are to study. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. And therein we may notice the state of those to whom it is proposed, those under the mighty hand of God whom his hand has humbled or brought low in respect of their circumstances in the world. And by these, I think, are meant not only such as are under particular signal afflictions, which is the lot of some, but also those who, by the providence of God, are in any kind of way lowered, which is the lot of all. All being in a state of submission or dependence on others, God has made this life a state of trial. And for that cause he has, by his mighty hand, subjected men one to another as wives, children, servants, to husbands, parents, masters, and these again to their superiors, among whom again even the highest depend on those under them as magistrates and ministers on the people, even the supreme magistrate. This state of the world God has made for the trial of men in their several stations and dependence on others, and therefore when the time of trial is over, it also comes to an end. Then cometh the end, when he shall have put down all rule and all authority and power. 1 Corinthians 15:24-25. Meantime, while it lasts, it makes humility necessary to all, to prompt them to the duty they owe their superiors, to whom God's mighty hand has subjected them. The duty itself, namely, humiliation of our spirits under the humbling circumstances the Lord has placed us in. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. Whether we are under particular afflictions, which have cast us down from the height we were sometime in, or whether we are only inferiors in one or more relations, or whether, which is most common, both these are in our case. We must therein eye the mighty hand of God as that which placed us there and is over us, there to hold us down in it. And so, with an awful regard thereto, bow down under it in the temper and disposition of our spirits, suiting our spirits to our lot, and careful to performing the duty of our low sphere. A particular spring of this duty. Therefore, we must consider that those who cannot quietly keep the place assigned them of God in their afflictions or relations, but still press upward against the mighty hand that is over them. That mighty hand resists them, throwing them down and often farther down than before, whereas it treats them with grace and favor that compose themselves under it to a quiet discharge of their duty in their situation. So, eyeing, considering this, we must set ourselves to humble ourselves. the infallible issue of that course, that he may exalt you in due time. The particle that is not always to be understood finally as denoting the end or design the agent proposes to himself, but sometimes eventually only as denoting the event or issue of the action. John 9:2-3. 1 John 2:19. So here, the meaning is not, humble yourselves, on design he may exalt you, but, and it shall issue in his exalting you. Compare James 4:10. Here is a happy event of humiliation of spirit secured, and that is exaltation or lifting up on high by the power of God, that he may exalt you. Exalting will as surely follow on humiliation of spirit, suitable to the low lot as the morning follows the night, or the sun rises after the dawn. And these words are fitted to obviate the objections that the world and our corrupt hearts are apt to make against bringing down the spirit to the low lot. Objection. If we let our spirit fall, we shall lie always at folks' feet, and they will trample on us. Answer. No. Pride of spirit, unsubdued, will bring men to lie at the feet of others forever. Isaiah 66:24. But humiliation of spirit will bring them undoubtedly out from under their feet. Malachi 4:2-3. They that humble themselves now will be exalted forever. They will be brought out of their low situation and circumstances. Cast yourselves even down with your low lot and assure yourselves you shall not lie there. Objection. But if we do not raise ourselves, none will raise us, and therefore we must see to ourselves to do ourselves right. Answer. That is wrong. Humble ye yourselves in respect of your spirits, and God will raise you up in respect of your lot, or low condition. And they that have God engaged for raising them have no reason to say they have none to do it for them. Bringing down of the Spirit is our duty. Raising us up is God's work. Let us not forfeit the privilege of God's raising us up by arrogating that work to ourselves, taking it out of His hand. Objection. But sure, we shall never rise high if we let our spirits fall. Answer. That is wrong, too. God will not only raise the humble ones, but He will lift them up on high, for so the word signifies. They shall be as high at length as ever they were low. Were they ever so low? No, the exaltation will be in proportion to the humiliation. Here is the date of that happy event when it will fall out, in due time or in the season, the proper season for it. Galatians 6:9. In due season we shall reap, if we faint not. We are apt to weary in humbling, trying circumstances, and would instantly have up our head. John 7:6. But Solomon observes, there is a time for everything when it does best, and the wise will wait for it. Ecclesiastes 3:1-8. There is a time, too, for exalting them that humble themselves. God has set it, and it is the due time for the purpose, the time when it does best, even as sowing in the spring and reaping in the harvest. When that time comes, your exalting shall no longer be put off, and it would come too soon should it come before that time. Submitting to the will of God. Doctrine. The bent of one's heart in humbling circumstances should lie towards a suitable humbling of the Spirit, as under God's mighty hand placing us in them, we shall consider what things are supposed in this. 1. It supposes that God brings man into humbling circumstances, and all the trees of the field shall know that I, the Lord, have brought down the high tree. Ezekiel 17:24. There is a root of pride in the hearts of all men on earth that must be mortified ere they can be meet for heaven, and therefore no man can miss in this time of trial some things that will give a proof whether he can stoop or no, and God brings them into humbling circumstances for that very end. The Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness to humble thee and to prove thee to know what was in thine heart. Deuteronomy 8:2.
This Reformation audio track is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. SWRB makes thousands of classic Reformation resources available, free and for sale, in audio, video, and printed formats. Our many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalog, containing thousands of classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, tapes, and videos at great discounts, is on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, that's Edmonton, Alberta, abbreviated capital A, capital B, Canada, T6L3T5. You may also request a free printed catalog. And remember that John Calvin, in defending the Reformation's regulative principle of worship, or what is sometimes called the scriptural law of worship, commenting on the words of God, "which I commanded them not, neither came into my heart," from his commentary on Jeremiah 7:31, writes, "God here cuts off from men every occasion for making evasions, since he condemns by this one phrase, 'I have not commanded them,' whatever the Jews devised. There is then no other argument needed to condemn superstitions than that they are not commanded by God. For when men allow themselves to worship God according to their own fancies, and attend not to his commands, they pervert true religion. And if this principle was adopted by the papists, all those fictitious modes of worship in which they absurdly exercise themselves would fall to the ground. It is indeed a horrible thing for the papists to seek to discharge their duties towards God by performing their own superstitions. There is an immense number of them, as it is well known, and as it manifestly appears. Were they to admit this principle, that we cannot rightly worship God except by obeying his word, they would be delivered from their deep abyss of error. The prophet's words, then, are very important, when he says that God had commanded no such thing, and that it never came to his mind, as though he had said that men assume too much wisdom when they devise what he never required, nay, what he never knew."